We're going to be talking about the Kisby Fund today. Lovely to see so much interest in this extraordinary innovation, as you'll be finding out from our panelists. Set a little bit of the background to what we're going to be talking about today. The Kisby Fund is named after the Life Belt. Now, I know, Warren, you've been instrumental in this for a long time. Where did you find this name, or where did the name come from?
The name is actually from a British naval officer named Thomas Kisby, who actually invented the life ring. More people lent themselves to using life buoy, but he was the actual inventor of the device. So it's named after British naval officer Thomas Kisby.
But the decision to name this fund?
We thought that the analogy of trying to save somebody was apt. The life buoy name was taken, and so we found the next best thing, one of the synonyms for the life buoy.
Mark, last time most people heard from you, you were running the post office. Now, there were some interesting developments on that side, which we're not going to get into now, but you could have done pretty much anything you wanted to after that. And yet you've chosen to get involved with the Kisby SME Fund. What was the appeal? What attracted you?
Thanks, Alex, and thanks for having us here. One of the reasons I went to the post office was I saw it as having the reach and infrastructure to get out into the marketplace. And my personal mission for the last decade, I guess, has been that I'm trying to find the middle so that we don't, for the rest of our lives, live in this tension of economic inequality, and so that we can have a peaceful economic coexistence with some prospect of economic dignity. Now, an SME-focused fund such as Kisby Fund is, particularly given its very different elements of design, I believe is the first properly considered vehicle that is going to get us into SMEs and finance them at an appropriate capital mix at an appropriate price. So to me, that's very exciting, and it's a mission that I've held close to my heart for some time, and I think we've got the elements of design right here.
Sean, what's your involvement here? We know Mark's the chairman and the whipcracker, I guess, but you've been involved in putting together tech, really good, strong tech for a couple of decades now. Is that the secret to all of this, that people can use tech to borrow more cheaply than they'd have to borrow elsewhere, and that the investors would get a better return? Is that kind of the story?
Alec, you know, I've been doing tech for a long time, as you know, and really focused on SME and SME lending and all the SME innovation, crowdfunding, breaking it down. But what I've learned in that period of time is that it's not technology. It's about financial innovation. And you know, I spent my life trying to invent technology and make technology better, but if you haven't got the core financial structure right, in other words, the ability to price a loan at the right price and make sure there's no defaults, and actually to reinvent a little bit of how you as a fund make money so that you can give money cheaper, that's an important element. So Mark's come along with a lot of financial engineering in the fund, in the way that the product is given to the small business. And that's what's been missing for me. We've been around private equity and about around crowdfunding. And yes, of course, the fact that we can use technology to make our operations efficient helps us to reduce the cost. And we can pass that cost on to the SMEs to not overburden them with cost of doing business with us. But fundamentally, the secret sauce in this product is not only its tech, it's actually the design of the products which we're putting out.
So I think tech has got a very enduring characteristic, which is that it's consistent and objective. Okay, so when you have within the filter system that you're using a piece of technology which can sort and sift and filter information, that's a vital piece because it behaves predictably and it's objective in what it spits out, you know, given what it takes in. So that capacity is an extraordinarily important part of the Kisby complexity. But the real issue is this, in my view, where people have try to fund small businesses is only with debt. Okay. So now, unfortunately, the lenders never get invited to the dinner. They just pay for the food. And the lenders never come to the party. So for a lender, your life consists of putting money at risk and either getting it back or not getting it back. The people that you get it back from wave you goodbye and go off into the distance and become Facebook or Naspers or whatever it is that they become. And so you do not participate in the upside as the debt providers. Now, debt providers have to kiss a lot of frogs before they find a princess. And every time they go into a particular sector and it doesn't work, which is characteristic of innovative and new businesses, is that a lot of them just don't work the first time around. People learn and change. And so they go in there, they lend a piece of money, that money doesn't come back. They go in there, lend another piece of money. Every time they do that, the risk profile changes and the cost of that money changes. And if the only return you can get as a lender is either a bad debt or a reasonable margin, you're not going to stay in business if you're in the growth asset companies, because that's not the binary outcome that you can expect. So in the end result, they price for default a lot because that's what they experience. And so the cost of that capital goes up and up and up until eventually they're lending money at, you know, 40% and above, which is usurious and destroys the very assets they're seeking to fund the growth of. What you need is a mixture of equity risk capital and secured debt capital. The capacity for borrowing money in a growing business is limited because you haven't yet matured your cash flow income to service it. Okay. So you need a partner that will help you through the growth stage with appropriate capital that doesn't require immediate servicing. And for that, that partner will want a piece of the party at the end. And so if you're just going to borrow money, you're going to get it at a price which you initially can't afford because you're not prepared to give away, or the people that provide it to you don't want part of who you are. If you get that mix right, you end up in a partnership with this, with an SME, instead of being a funder. You end up sitting next to them and reasonably often in the beginning going, how does this mix work for you? Should we defer a bit of that, add a bit of this? And they out there growing without having to sit there every month and going, I've got this massive interest bill, I can't take that risk. And so we're trying to go where banks don't go because they don't like equity risk. And we're private equity players. They're looking for, you know, much more exciting, much more obvious builds than we are, which we're looking at ordinary businesses here. Ordinary business who, but for capital, would be growing much faster.
Okay, so on the screen there, and I think this is really what a lot of people are going to be interested in. Maybe you can explain this. We're talking here about companies who are up to turnovers of up to 50 million as a medium-sized enterprise. So anybody above that, is that outside of the net, just as a starting point?
We would look for companies with a turnover somewhere upwards of 10 million, you know, with no upper limit, A. B, we would look to capital funding sizes, which range from about 1 million to, say, 50 million. I don't think we'd want to go bigger than that. And we'd look also to the number of employees that this enables or creates or retains. And so what we're trying to do is look at the ecosystem within which these companies operate, and bearing in mind that every time you retain an employee, the country's got an asset. Every time someone becomes unemployed, the country's got a liability. So we're trying to bring that net together, and I'll talk later perhaps about the support mechanisms other than money. But our target is pretty loosely defined. We want people that behave well, that pay tax, that are registered and compliant with all of those kinds of business functionalities. But our size is a lot more flexible than any definition we've come across.
Brilliant. So anybody from turnover of 10 million upwards, they're in the game as far as you're concerned. Now, maybe Sean, you can talk to this one quickly for us. A lot of these companies are factoring their debt at the moment, or factoring their invoices at the moment. They're paying 25% to 32% interest rates. And then Kisby is looking at an interest rate which is significantly below that, 19.75. Just explain how you can do that.
Maybe just talk to this point here about what is available for the SMEs at the moment. We've got an interesting situation now with this, the time for Kisby. We're going to go into a five-year period where our view is that banks will contract funding because of the way they view the risk that they can't have, our Mark explained. And so whenever you have a contraction of lenders into a market or people pulling back, you get a whole lot of new people coming into the marketplace. And they're going to come in these niche places. We call them micro lenders, or we call them effectively small lenders that are coming to the specific place and throwing money out there with very little, I mean, obviously due diligence, but not quite as much as you like, but they're getting away with it because they charge a very, very high interest rate and they're servicing an unmet demand. So I don't think that anybody should be looking at credit which costs them 30% a year if you're an SME. I mean, a 30% interest rate is very, very difficult to service out of the normal profitability and cash flow of an SME. So when we looked at this 19.75, it's a target that we have. We think that 19.75, this is actually, it's an effective interest rate, but technically it would be called 18. But it's something which people can afford. It's something you can, on a reasonable profitability, a reasonable margin, a reasonable service, you can actually function and grow your business and not pay so much money towards interest that you can't employ more people. So we've got a very specific target around that. I mean, if you think about the factoring businesses, they all serve a great purpose. They serve an instant cash flow purpose, but it's very expensive. I mean, I saw an advert today offered to our business. We could have our debtors factored at basically a 6% charge of the actual debtor. 6% to get paid now versus in 60 days. You know, if you times that effectively, what are you dealing with? A significant interest rate if it's, you know, it's north of 50% that you're paying effectively. If you're on an annualized basis for that money, it's just too expensive. It eats up too much of our margin. So the main aim is to be able to offer a rate of this, but clearly from a returns point of view, in order to get this, we've got to have some upside return, which is where Mark talks about participating with companies as they grow as well.
Warren, let's just quickly give a little bit of your involvement in this and why.
I'm sort of the guy who's been stringing all these disparate parts of the Le Bourget Investment Group together. It's always been my vision to build unique financial services products. It's always been a problem that we've never had a recognized brand, and using technology and media to get that to service the public. So my job is really just bringing disparate teams together. That's been my role, is getting everyone singing off the same hymn sheet and organizing meetings and all that kind of stuff, and just making sure everyone shares the same vision.
I'd like to just get a little understanding about who's going to fund all of this. Where's the money going to come from?
First of all, you know, the money's not coming from the public. We are raising money from savvy institutions like major pension funds or major pools of capital, wise, informed pools of capital, on the basis that they don't actually have access to this asset class. As a pension fund, you know, setting Section 28 aside for the time being, most pools of capital have access to listed equities or bonds or loans or whatever, but they don't have access to this particular SME growing small company as an asset class, because they don't have the time to go out there and look for them and filter them as we can do with our various stages of loan approval and investment oversight. And so we are bringing to them the sophisticated mainstream capital players in the country. We're bringing to them an access to an asset class which we've gone out and found.
Kevin Barrett wants to know, this is a brilliant concept. Does the borrower have the option to repay your loan rather than convert the debt to equity? And what are the triggers that determine a conversion?
The borrower typically would have a mix. The funds ratio, we think, we target to be one part convertibles, four parts debt. And typically most SMEs, after we've had a look at them and looked at their immediate cash flows, we would decide what is an appropriate mix of that capital on the basis that from a portfolio perspective, we'll end up with roughly that ratio, about 20% equity, about 80% debt. Now, we have the right to convert. And obviously, that right has got to be at a price which we've got to agree with the SME as we go into it, whether it's a formulaic price or whatever it is. But we might find that within 6 months of going down this five-year journey, we've discovered Alibaba, we've discovered whatever we have. At that point in time, it would be crazy for us not to convert into our 20% equity or whatever the formula would tell us, and, you know, list the company or whatever it is that we might do. There is a continuous conversation about when we should convert into equity. If we don't convert into equity, actually, okay, so we could actually convert into shares at any time, you know, roughly 5 year period that we're anticipating this will happen. If we don't, when we exit from the fund, that piece of funding, we'd look to get a 15% real return on. And so it would have a very low servicing cost. So I think it's going to be serviced at something like 7%, which is CPI plus 2.5% orders of magnitude. And so that's got a low service cost, but you're giving away some of the action. And that is a right of the fund, not a right of the target SME.
Priya Duplessis says, is the 19.75% rate an IRR, i.e. a combination of interest and equity returns? And if so, what are the interest and equity components giving that 19.75%?
So the 19.75 is the senior debt piece. That's the rate on the standard debt loan. The blended return, if my memory serves me, depends on what the performance of the equity piece might be. But I think that was the price to the SME of the borrowing.
Yeah, technically, in a normal standardized loan, which Mark described, if you had a vanilla, which I don't think anybody's going to be quite vanilla, you'd have 80% of the loan at your 19.75, and then 20% of your loan would have this option for us to have an equity type return. And there we will be looking at CPR plus a 15% real. So it would end up being higher than 19 on the remaining 20% if we chose to exercise it.
Hans Bolo wants to know, what makes you different from business partners?
It's going to be difficult for me to answer that question because I don't know who they are. Alec, I must be straightforward with you. We didn't go and look at what's out there and try and design something that wasn't. We looked at what was required and designed from that level. So we sat around and said, what is missing? Why are SMEs not getting money? Why are the industrial little companies in Port Elizabeth not growing? Why are little companies limited to what their parents can guarantee? And why won't the banks go there? And why are, you know, we try to do what Uber's doing. We try to go to the client instead of asking the client to come to us. And it is our combined assessment that this mixture of capital at a price way below what the usurious plus prices are, that people that don't have assets, that we are able to fund it.
There's basically two sides to this whole KISB project. Okay,
So the senior notes is a fully amortizing loan, and we typically think that's going to be between 12 and 36 months. And the size of that loan, I mean, those things are, I think, are all self-explanatory. That loan needs to be serviced and amortized over its life. So that is what the company can bear in terms of what I might describe as traditional loan finance. Then we have what we call impact capital. That's got a much lower interest rate and potentially a longer term. The interest rate there is CPI plus 2.5%. No one would lend you money at that rate unless they had a piece of the equity. Okay. So that particular instrument has got conversion rights into equity at an agreed formulaically driven price any point in time during the term of this relationship. Or if we don't convert into equity, that loan, that impact capital, has to be redeemed to yield to us a 15% real return. Okay, so that they can then, if you like to look at it mechanically, at the end of this period, at 5 years' time, they can have a rights issue, or they can list on the stock market, or they can find someone to buy a stake in their business and use that cash to redeem that capital at what will yield to us a 15% real IRR. Unless we've converted into equity along the way, in which case we can then just sell the equity to that investor.
Dina Chetty says, the model calls for tracking on a regular basis the overall performance of the invested company. If that is so, how do you go about this?
The short answer is we use technology to do it. When we get this, a portfolio of this size, it's effectively integrated aspects to degrees of the accounting. Yes, we have to monitor them, and that's what I've been building for the last 5 years, is various technology elements to monitor that, whether it's the PAYE returns, whether it's people submitting to us their accounts, whether it's their bank account details. We have a number of ways to ultimately to be engaged with the borrower. However, of course, when it comes to the larger ones, which Mark was talking about, and they will, of course, need to be your normal private equity type sit downs, meeting with the people and going through as well for the impact capital portion.
Dina had a follow up, and that is, if you take a typical debt equity loan, what would be the overall cost of capital over a period of 5 years?
In order for us to be able to model this, you want to find businesses where you convert your equity earlier on than the 5 years and perhaps even hold it. So this is the combination of a debt fund and an equity fund effectively brought together in the structure. So the cost to someone is our risk, right? So it may end up costing significantly if that equity turns out to be worth 200 or 300 million and the guy only borrowed some. So depending on the growth, the company succeeds. So it's not an exact science. It's effectively a note, a loan combined with a degree of equity. And because we are going to be able to make equity upside, we can afford to use that equity upside to subsidize effectively this cheaper loan of the senior notes ultimately in the base, which will have relatively, you know, in our mind, we will still have defaults in this SME sector. So in order to not push the interest rates up and keep these interest rates low, we need to have an upside blue sky effectively in some of these equity instruments that we take.